That music doesn't need to be force-fed to you, that you can get it your own way.
Welcome to In Context, WPN's live public affairs call-in show. I'm your host, Ken McDermott-Rowe. You can hear In Context every Monday from noon to 1 p.m., except the first Monday of the month when WPKN's general manager, Steve, reports to listeners. Our website is incontextreport.com. You can check us out on Facebook and see our videos on the In Context Report channel on YouTube. Programs like In Context are made possible by the generous contributions of listeners like you, who keep non-commercial WPKN independent and strong. Tomorrow, Tuesday, WPKN begins its winter on-air fundraising drive. We'll be offering some wonderful premiums, so please call in during this 13-day drive to make a pledge to support WPKN, your community station. Thanks very much. With me in the studio are In Context military affairs commentator Marshawn McDermott-Rowe.
Good afternoon, everyone.
And our guest commentator, Del LaPietro. And Del hosts his own show here on WPKN. When can people listen to you, Del?
Second, fourth, and fifth Fridays.
Second, fourth, and fifth Fridays.
7 to 9, drive time, prime time.
Outstanding. And we'll be opening the phones for you listeners in just a few minutes. But Marshawn and Del, can you please start us off with some comments on some of the recent important events? For one really interesting one I'd like to get your take on is a report which came out and disappeared, seems to, from most of the media yesterday.
Quickly.
Came out in Fox, very interesting development, that two Russian bombers on Tuesday, that was the 12th of February, circled the U.S. island territory of Guam, which caused U.S. jets to scramble. What do you think about that?
Well, you know, I mean, it certainly makes me feel like I live in 1984 nowadays. It really does. Because I was sitting with a bunch of my mates, and I was checking the news on my phone, and I said, lads, check this out. The, Russians just buzzed the American airbase at Guam. And they go, no, really? And it was on Fox News, I swear. And so, you know, we thought we'd be hearing more about it. Heard nothing. So
nothing.
Yesterday, I get home, I check, I go into Yahoo News, and I check and I Google it, and I look up, you know, Russian jets fly over Guam. Nothing.
Nothing about it.
I can't
it, huh?
find the Fox News article has been deleted. The only article I could find was from the UK Daily Mail. That was it.
The other thing about it is they were packing, my friend.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
That was what the report said.
It appears from what the report said and from observers that they were carrying nukes.
Because carrying these were nukes. They were identified as Russian Tu-95 bomber aircraft. That's according to Fox, the Fox story that's now gone.
Those are the Russian first strike bombers. The idea is that these things carry the nukes, nuclear warheads on them, although they could be capable of carrying other payloads like either chemical weapons or EMP bombs. So, you know, These are their first strike weapons. And it seems to me that the Russians are making a very clear point, because what we're doing is we're provoking the Russians on every front. We're provoking the Chinese on every front. And I think they know a conflict's coming. So they're trying to hit us in the head and kind of go, hey, you know, back off.
It's a little test.
Exactly. It's kind of like if you were to pull on the tiger's tail and the tiger was to say, stop, stop, stop. But eventually it's going to turn around and bite you.
And the corporate media is not letting the American people know to what extent we are confronting China around the world. And as we've been reporting for almost 2 years now. The war in Syria is essentially a surrogate war between the United States and its allies in the region, and as well as NATO on one side, and Russia and Iran on the other side, supporting the Syrian government.
Absolutely, absolutely. And we see the same thing occurring in both North Korea and with China over the Senkaku or Doyu Islands, as the Chinese call them, which are off the coast of Japan and off the coast of China, respectfully. And so we see this great conflict brewing. The Russians and the Chinese have formed a military pact together. They have their proxies, North Korea, Iran, and Syria, Chavez in Venezuela, who, for all intents and purposes, may be dead. You have Chavez in Venezuela, you have Cuba, you have Bolivia. You have all these countries coming together to behind the Russians and the Chinese. So what we're seeing is this great alliance building up against the United States. I feel like, to a great extent, I'm living in Germany in 1944. Stalingrad has fallen. The Field Marshal Paulus has surrendered. The Russians are closing in on Warsaw. We know none of this is going on. We're not being told anything.
Well, of course, you just alluded to it now, but let's talk a little bit more about the expanding Russian military presence in the Western Hemisphere through their alliance with Venezuela.
Absolutely. Well, the Russians built a naval base off the coast of Venezuela a number of years ago. And this is probably the most brilliant military coup, political coup, for the Russians since the Cold War, because what they do now is, before they had to do, if they wanted to send submarines off our coast, particularly this new stealth Bore class submarine, which is a stealth submarine, and I can get into that also later. Before, they would have to sail it from the Baltic fleet, from the Baltic Sea, all the way across the Atlantic. Then from the Atlantic, they'd get to the U.S. coast, but then they'd immediately have to go back because they wouldn't have enough food or fuel or anything. They'd have to return. And also made it every time you had to pass through the U.S. sonar nets, it was so much harder. Whereas now what they do is they go and they dock in the port in Venezuela, they refuel, resupply, and then they shoot up our coast.
Why wouldn't they want warm weather anyway?
Exactly, exactly. Oh, for Russians, Venezuela would be paradise.
Cuba must have been great for them.
Oh, yeah.
What a switch.
Well, and that's the other thing, too. You're also seeing the influence of Cuba expanding. I was talking to a friend of mine from Venezuela, and he was telling me he's from Argentina, but he was telling me how, when on his trip to Venezuela, he noticed that there were a tremendous amount of Cubans there.
It was quite remarkable, listeners, that apparently in government offices in Venezuela, you now, performing official work, are Cubans.
As well as in Bolivia, Nicaragua, and Ecuador.
And I got to believe that they're getting Russian support, because Cuba's a pretty small country.
Well, and the same friend of mine was also telling me how when he was, again, while in Venezuela, he saw Russian military helicopters flying into the airports. And they were offloading artillery. The planes were offloading tanks. I mean, there was a Russian army, he was explaining, in Venezuela. And just to give you folks an idea, there is no mistaking Russian helicopters or planes for anything else. First of all, they got that big red star on the sign, which is a bit of a giveaway. But also, they're very distinct and very unique-looking helicopters. You wouldn't mistake them for anything else. So he said they were clearly, beyond any shadow of a doubt, Russian helicopters and Russian planes.
There's a worldwide confrontation between the U.S. on one side and Russia and China on the other side. And the United States government and the corporate media should stop treating us like children. We have been involved in a struggle for world hegemony since practically the day the Soviet Union under Gorbachev collapsed in 1991. Right after that collapse, we began our big drive with our invasion of the Persian Gulf. And the American people need to understand we're involved in a struggle for really global supremacy, mainly over important natural resources. And the Russians and the Chinese, we're trying to cut them off. Well, the Russians have their own, but the Chinese particularly, we want to cut them off from access. And this is a high-stakes game. And I think the American people should be informed about what's going on. That's why we're here, so that they can make a decision whether we want to be in this situation, or whether we want to pursue a different foreign policy, because where we're going to go now, it certainly looks like this flyover in Guam by Russian nuclear bombers is just a taste of things to come.
And the fact that the government doesn't trust us enough to tell us, part of what this is indicative of, this type of flyover, is the fact that the Russians are trying to send a message that we're not afraid to hit you. We will hit you. If we want to hit you, we will hit you. And the fact that we're hiding it from the American people only shows how vulnerable we are. Mm-hmm. The fact that we're so vulnerable that they could fly over U.S. territory and we would not only do nothing, but we would completely just pretend it didn't happen. You know, we scrambled jets. The F-16s were scrambled. They took off and tried to, you know, tell the Russians to leave, and the Russians left. But the fact, though, that it wasn't reported is, I think it's demonstrating the fact that the U.S. government is genuinely afraid.
Well, shades of that, 2010, a missile launching off the coast of L.A., maybe you remember it, Del, when that was clearly a missile, was videotaped going off from some location just off the coast of Los Angeles. The initial reports were that it was a missile. It appeared to be a missile from the videotapes in CNN, and then a few hours later, our government claimed we were watching contrails from a jet. Well, the independent researcher Wayne Mattson, who is an expert on naval warfare, said he identified the source of this missile as a nuclear-powered Chinese submarine, and obviously they sent it up. Probably it was a dud, or they just sent it up to show us they could send a missile off our coast.
Oh, absolutely. And again, I think that's part of the problem that the American people don't understand is that here we are, we're provoking the Russians and the Chinese, and they have the capabilities of hitting us. But a lot of people I talk to, I feel like our leadership lives in the same delusional world where they believe, well, we can poke at the Chinese and the Russians. They'll bluster. They'll say, you know, like Khrushchev, we will bury you. But in reality, they will never do anything. And I think we kind of live in that delusional world where we figure we can, you know, push the Chinese around, push them out of Africa. We can topple the pro-Chinese governments in Africa. We can try to topple the pro-Russian governments in Syria and Iran. And ultimately, at the end of the day, they'll do nothing because they're so frightened of us. You know, it's kind of like the Austro-Hungarian Empire.
Let's find out what the listeners think. Do we Americans live in a delusional world that we've created? And why don't you let us know what you think by calling into In Context on WPKN at 203-336-9756. That's 203-336-9756. I'm your host, Ken McDermott Rowe. I'm here with our special commentator today, Del LaPietro, and our military affairs commentator, Marshawn McDermott Rowe. And we're talking about America's foreign policy, about our vulnerability to Russia and China, about how our foreign policy is bringing them into a confrontation with us into a confrontation with these great powers. And we're asking, are we living, are we deluding ourselves that this isn't happening? Do we need a new military policy? Do we need a new foreign policy? Tell us what you think by calling into In Context at 203-336-9756.
I love that Thomas Jefferson quote you have here, by the way. Did you want to read?
Oh, sure. Yeah, Thomas Jefferson.
The first long sentence.
Thomas Jefferson wrote some time ago, when the people fear their government, there is tyranny. When the government fears the people, there is liberty.
There you go.
And that's why we're trying to get the truth out there so the people know what our government policies are, and our government should be paying attention to us. It seems like what it does is gives us entertainment, distraction, deception, instead of listening to us, and we're supposed to be in charge.
Well, and I think that's the greatest problem. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, I talk to some of my friends, and they say, well, you know, President Obama, yeah, you know, he's doing all this stuff I don't like. I mean, you know, he's waging war in countries that I can't find on the map. He's, you know, sending good American soldiers to die in places like Afghanistan when he himself says we're trying to pull out. You know, he has a kill list, which is kind of Stalin-esque, you know, a kill list with American citizens on it, expanding the drone war and all the rest of it. But then at the same time, you know, people say, well, there's nothing I can do about it. It's either him or Mitt Romney. And you're thinking, we're a democracy. It doesn't have to be that way. If we, the people, say, you know what, we are sick and tired of these wars. We're sick and tired, more importantly, of our collapsing economy. We're sick and tired of the idea that the Russians can just fly over U.S. territory, that the Chinese have submarines off the coast, and yet we're going to go build bridges in Afghanistan. We can't defend our own borders, and we're going to go build bridges in Afghanistan. I'm sorry, we the American people have the right, at least for the time being, to stand up and say, no, national defense is more important. No, our economy is more important. No, jobs here are more important than creating jobs in China, India, and Mexico. We should make American companies come back here. But instead, people sort of bow their heads and say, well, I guess that's what the government's going to do. And the problem is once you start giving the government that kind of authority, any government, anywhere in the world, you start bowing your head and saying, well, whatever they want to do, that's how you end up with these executive orders. That's how you end up with a kill list that wasn't authorized by Congress.
Yeah, it's 203-336-9756, and the troop movement around the globe, too, is an interesting thing. And what we had some little bit of news in Germany, right? You want to talk about that?
Oh, yes, the U.S. wanting to withdraw some of its bases in Germany.
Yeah, we're bringing back, I believe, two combat brigades from Germany. Here we are, what, 60... 67 years since the end of World War II. We have a huge military presence in Germany. It's the headquarters of our European command. It's also the headquarters of our African command, of all things.
Well, you know, I mean, Europe and Africa are so close. I think this shows a fundamental flaw in the Americans' definition of geography. You know, Europe and Africa, close enough, you know. Germany, South Africa, you know, relatively close to each other. But
so there's very little support in Congress anymore for these troops to be stationed in Germany. But it helps ensure that NATO, which is really Germany is by far the most important European country, stay within the fold of the American foreign policy. And it's very interesting that as we're withdrawing troops from Germany, the Germans, who I didn't know this, but most of their gold is held in at central banks abroad. Something like 2/3 of it is not held in Germany. They're starting to move their gold reserves from the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, which is the biggest holder of German gold. They're moving it back home. So I don't know what that's all about and how it relates to our troops being brought out of Germany. But I think eventually Europe has to have its own foreign policy.
Well, 300 tons, they say.
300 yeah. tons, yeah.
How are they going to move that, I wonder?
Very heavy pallets. But I certainly think, I mean, in terms of the gold, what Germany is looking at is they're looking at the collapse of the fiat currencies. And they don't want their currency to collapse because they know the euro is going to implode eventually. They know that, I mean, eventually what's going to happen is country. I mean, the fact that Greece is considering going back to the drachma is indicative of how the fiat currency system is starting to implode. So what you're starting to see is the Germans saying, well, you know what, if we have to bring back the Deutschmark, we want our currency to be the only one in Europe backed by gold.
Yeah.
They ultimately don't want to be the head of the euro. They want to force the French and the Greeks and the Spanish to all use Deutschmarks. That's the idea.
Well, that's probably what the euro is going to be. I'm a naysayer. I think the euro will survive. I think it'll survive because eventually the Europeans are going to recognize that in order for them to survive, they have to stick together in a Europe led by Germany, the most successful
economy. Yeah, but you see, the Europeans will never do that willingly. Yeah. You see that in Greece. That's why the fastest growing party in Greece is a right-wing nationalist party. Same thing in Italy.
There's a lot of stress there. I don't deny it, but the euro is still pretty strong.
And the number is 203-336-9756. I wonder if Germany will get us to deliver the gold back to them.
That's actually a really good question, because that'd be taking the gold out of the U.S., bringing it back to Germany, right, putting them in control of the means for valuing their own currency.
The reason I think they're doing it, too, is because our economy is so weak. They're afraid that that gold is going to go somewhere.
Surprise me if we stole it.
That's right. We're a country with our debt now exceeds our GDP. Are we a place you'd leave your gold?
I don't know. If arms can run out of Libya, I suppose.
The gold could just disappear. They could just say, well, you know, we don't have your gold anymore, but we do have the certificate.
Yeah, we got the IOU.
Yeah.
And here it is, just like run the rest of our own government.
I think also the Europeans want to be an empire in of their own. When we're talking independent European foreign policy, we're not talking about an isolationist policy. The Europeans, with the exception of Switzerland and maybe Scandinavia, are not going to be neutral. The thing is, they want to get back in the empire game themselves. The only difference is they want their empire to benefit them. The French want to have an empire. They want to control Mali, but they don't want to do it for NATO. They want to do it for France.
Sure.
So I think, for now at least, the reason why I think we're pulling our troops out of Germany is ultimately because we're bankrupt. I mean, I listened to General O. De Niro giving a speech at the Brookings Institute.
Did you say O. De Niro?
O. De Niro? Yeah.
We don't have enough De Niro.
As soon as we went off Venezuela, you lost the language there.
And who is General O. De Niro, for the listeners who don't know?
He's Chief of Staff of the Army. And I saw him giving a speech at the Brookings Institute, and he was talking, you know, very, very passionately about how, we're basically bankrupting the Department of Defense. Now, this is particularly the Department of the Army is getting hit really bad, because what we're doing, and people wonder, they say, well, we spend so much, how come our military is so broke? And the fact is that we still spend a tremendous amount on drones. We spend it on technology for the Air Force, aircraft carrier-based drones, things for the Navy. And we don't put any of it towards...
Back in,
exactly.
Not in the military, but as we've noted, a lot of it's going into our national security apparatus here at home. And here's a very disturbing story, I think. Homeland Security is planning on buying more than 1.6 billion rounds of ammunition in the next 4 or 5 years. Now, why does the U.S. Department...
And that's on top of the 1 billion that they already purchased last year.
So why does... I think this is part of that program. So why does Homeland Security need over 1 billion rounds of ammunition? This is...
they got to practice.
This is 5 rounds for every American citizen.
Let's kind of look at this proportionally, too. General Odinero said... because the army is going to be made so bankrupt, they're not going to have the money to train above the squad level. Now, a squad is about 12 men. A platoon is about 50 men, 4 squads in a platoon. And so they say the army will be so bankrupt over the course of the next year, they will not have money to train above the squad level. So, I mean, that means they won't have the money to train more than, 12 people at a time. I mean, it's ridiculous. But at the same time, they're giving... an unbelievable amount of money, unbelievable amount of drones, bullets, tanks to the Department of Homeland Security. Well, the pattern here is very, very simple. You see, when you look at, for example, authoritarian regimes throughout the world, you look at Hitler's Germany. Hitler had 2,000 Gestapo officers for the entire Reich, and the army was raised up in status real high.
What was the Gestapo's function?
They were the secret police.
Okay.
But what I'm saying is there were 2,000 officers and this was when the Reich was at its peak, stretching from almost close to Moscow across North Africa. You had only 2,000 officers. Now, and the army was raised very high socially because Hitler trusted the army. Now, you contrast that with Stalin's Russia. In Stalin's Russia, the NKVD, which was their secret police, the precursor to the KGB, they were the ones who were given all the money, all the weapons, all the training. And in fact, the entire general staff for the Red Army was executed, almost the entire staff. They were all executed. So the army was defunded virtually because Stalin did not trust the army. Now, Hitler trusted the army because he was a nationalist. Stalin didn't trust the army because he was, first of all, he was an authoritarian the same as Hitler was, but he was also selling out a lot of Russian land to Germany, to other Western powers, and indeed to some Eastern powers. So, I mean, what you saw was that he did not trust that the army would not eventually revolt against him, that the army would not say, hey, wait a minute, these gulags selling all this land, no, we don't want that anymore. Because traditionally speaking, the army is of the people. Now, and Stalin made no pretenses to being of the people either. So he feared the representatives of the people, which was the army. So what did he do? He defunds the army and he funds the national security apparatus. So what we're seeing here is the Obama administration is doing the same thing, defunding the army, funding the national security apparatus. Because at the end of the day, the army might say, hey, listen, we don't like the idea of a kill list. We got all the guns. You know what? We're not going to let you do this anymore. But if your national security apparatus is the ability to arrest all your soldiers, well, you take the power away from the army, which is fundamentally the representatives of the people. The other thing is
the
army...
So this is the fundamental point, if I could just slow you down here.
Yeah.
The army is more in tune with the people. We saw that in Egypt, for example, where they were critical players. Could the army be trusted by Mubarak and putting down a popular revolt? Whereas your secret police, these are the guys the government can rely on to do your bidding, to put down popular unrest. They're kind of they're like the Praetorian Guard, as you will. So what we're seeing in America is a shift of resources from our ordinary soldiers to our national security apparatus. And the Washington Post did a great expose on a couple years ago, this phenomenal explosion of contractors around the country, particularly in D.C., getting tens of billions of dollars in contracts for all sorts of supposed national security programs of really dubious value. And the general, and who was a pinnacle of this operation, said he never got any useful information from all these corporate contractors. But that's where the money is going today. So what does it say about our government's concern? About its government's concerns, is it fearing unrest? Are they fearing that our economy may further deteriorate and they need to clamp down on us? I mean, what's really going on here?
I think a lot of it is it's the traditional fear of authoritarian governments. Eventually, they're not going to be allowed to rip off the country anymore because eventually people are going to decide, we don't like the kill list. We don't like the idea of selling all of our natural resources. We don't like the idea of shipping all our cars. Our car manufacturers to China.
You think that's why Obama really likes Homeland Security all that much? Because it pulls away from the control of the Joint Chiefs?
Absolutely. And the thing is, Homeland Security are, the Army doesn't get politically indoctrinated. Unlike the Chinese, the Army doesn't have political indoctrination as part of its training. Homeland Security does. So you know that, yes, Homeland Security will be loyal to you, whereas the Army, you know, they're only loyal to the Constitution.
Indoctrination is really critical. And we see this tension going back to JFK, who wanted to shut down the – he did. He planned to shut down the CIA's covert operations. He didn't trust them after the Bay of Pigs fiasco. That was in 1961. We had – there was a disastrous invasion of Cuba by emigres. Kennedy said, we're not going to offer them overt military support. It was a disaster. And after that, he didn't trust Alan Dulles and the CIA. And he said, we're replacing you guys with the military. From now on, anything that needs to be done on this line is going to be done by soldiers who are under my command. And you know what the CIA did to Kennedy? Kennedy got killed in 1963. And it's pretty clear from a guest we had on our show, Joan Mellon, that that was a CIA job.
But I think what we're seeing here is different, though, than the CIA in the 60s. What we're seeing here, because Department of Homeland Security is not going to be like the CIA. They're not going to be an organization loyal to only themselves. The Department of Homeland Security is going to be loyal to the president. That's it. So the idea is that if the president, if President Obama says, you know what, I'm going to run for a third term, or you know what, I'm going to kill...
Yeah, but
I'm
who's at
kill...
the pinnacle of this apparatus? I believe that the president of the United States for many years now has just been a functionary from whoever is the, or whoever the real economic powers in this country. And those guys are the ones who ultimately control the national security apparatus.
Well, yeah, but I mean, I'm not going to label them as the CIA just because, I mean, that's something that I don't know. I don't know who really runs Obama, but the point I'm trying to make is that the Department of Homeland Security is going to be loyal to whoever the president is. Therefore, and the president is becoming more and more like a king. So the idea is, regardless of who's behind the president, the fact is that the Army will step in and say, hey, you know what? We're not going to turn our guns on protesters in the streets. We're not going to go and arrest gun owners because, well, the president doesn't want people to own firearms anymore. But Department of Homeland Security will, and that's the point.
Well, you know, that brings me to an interesting anecdote, Dell. We heard from the same a fellow that that was in Venezuela and in Argentina, and he recounted an incident that occurred when the generals were running Argentina in the 70s, and he was in a house that his father had a hunting gun in the house. And the military, which was running the country, raided the house, okay? They didn't want anybody to own guns. That was part of the dictatorship. And they took this guy. He was just there visiting. He was just there staying. He didn't even know there was a gun there. He was tortured for 5 days and then spent years in, I guess, litigation trying to get off. And when they were torturing him, they said, you are a terrorist. The assumption was anybody who has a firearm in his personal possession must be a terrorist.
May rise up against the particulars in government.
That was it.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's the fear. But that's one of the things that I find ironic. You know, they go out against gun owners. And then you get this guy like Chris Dorner. Now, Dorner was... From what a lot of his friends and relatives have said, he was pro-Obama, anti-gun. The guy was pro-Obama and anti-gun.
Doesn't seem possible.
Exactly. It seems almost bizarre. But what's interesting, though, is that now you have the guy who goes nuts and shoots all the kids at Sandy Hook, which is an atrocity. Everybody's first reaction is, you know, let's outlaw firearms. Chris Dorner does this. He's anti-gun, pro-Obama, and there are now demonstrators saying that Dorner is like Django, or Django. I never saw the movie, but
There's more to this
with
whole
Jamie Foxx,
story
like,
than meets the
because
eye.
Well, because they're saying that he was, you know, he was fighting against the corrupt police force. Now, granted, he was killing family members of cops as well. He wasn't just killing cops.
What he's alleged to have done. But let's go back. Who was Chris Dorner? He was a naval officer. Okay. He was an educated guy, college graduate. He was a naval officer, and he was had been hired as an LA police officer. Okay, he was fired from the LA Police Department. He was an African American because he filed a report. He said he witnessed a police brutality, another officer beating someone, and he made a report on that, and that is why he was fired. So, you know, and the LA Police Department has a pretty bad reputation in that regard. So we don't, you know, you really wonder what's really behind this whole thing. And now they say he killed all these people. For years he tried to get his job back. He was really, it seems like he was treated unfairly.
But that's the way they're portraying him. Yeah. And that's what they're doing.
Those are the facts. We know that's what happened.
But I mean, what they're portraying him as is almost a martyr now, you know, the man who fought against injustice because his manifesto and everything. He said, I will strike back at the cops who are corrupt, but then at the same time he's killing police officers' family members.
Yeah, so, I think he's a waste of discussion, tell you the truth, guys.
Well, I think it's just another example of what an event happens and we don't really know. We may never really know what actually happened. It's going to be spun out.
It's going to be months.
Well, we may never know. And it'll be spun out to somebody's advantage.
Well, that's actually what I was, because I didn't mean to enter discussion about him individually, but the point I was trying to make was that what you do is you create you have your dangerous rebels, which are guys like, you know, your average gun owner, and, you know, especially in places like, you know, like your countryside areas, you know, where everybody owns a gun. They're the dangerous gun owners, NRA and stuff. Oh, they're the dangerous gun owners. And then you create your homegrown heroes, if you will, the okay gun owners. And so what you know, you're rebels. It's okay to feel that this guy's a rebel. It's not okay to feel that head of the NRA is a rebel. So what you do is, Stalin used to do that brilliantly. What he would do is he'd play two groups of people off of against each other in this way, saying that, you know, oh, these people, they're kulaks, they're bourgeoisie. You know, you shouldn't like them. And then he would say, but then this group of people who have a lot of money, they're okay. Yeah. They're revolutionaries. Even though fundamentally the two groups, one was okay, one was not. Both were bad guys.
Oh, you divide and conquer.
But you divide and conquer. And that was my whole point with the Chris Dorner thing, is just that what you see going on here is a divide and conquer mentality.
Well, if you would like to put in your two cents, we'd love to hear from you. Thank at you. 203-336-9756. 203-336-9756. My name's Ken. I'm here with Del and Marchand. The name of the show is In Context, WPKN's live public affairs call-in show. We're on from noon to 1 p.m. every Monday, except the first Monday of the month. And our website is incontextreport.com. And that number again is 203-336-9756. We'll be with you for just another 23 minutes. So if you give us a ring, we'd be happy to put you on the air, and we'd love to know what you think.
And so I think that's the key, is you keep people divided, you keep people fighting each other, and then they don't pay attention to the man behind the curtain. They don't pay attention to the fact that, you know, kind of bring it full circle to what we've been talking about originally.
Yes.
People stop paying attention. They start paying attention to Chris Dorner. They stop paying attention to North Korea. They stop paying attention to the Russian bombers doing the flybys. They stop paying attention to U.S. Special Forces in Syria. You know, you conveniently distract them with one enemy. Oh, yeah, please.
This is Samantha from Woodbury. Samantha, go ahead.
Hi, Samantha.
Hi, I just wanted to comment on everything you guys were talking about with Chris Dorner and the whole Sandy Hook situation. I really think it's unfortunate, you know, that people are trying to create the sort of martyrdom or this idea that, you know, it's okay for one person to do it but not another. And it's really sad. You know, I don't really get
it. Is your sense, Samantha, that people are trying to justify what Chris Dorner did, or...?
I think it's there's an idea that, you know,
or what he's alleged to have done, I should say.
Or alleged to have done, exactly. I think that, you know, you've got people who are, you know, oh, well, he's a vigilante, or trying to justify, when you go around killing people's families, there's nothing okay with that. And, I mean, what he did, he could have been fighting injustice, but the way he handled it was completely, I mean, I don't think anyone would argue was wrong.
Yeah,
but the idea that you can discuss and say, you know, he was trying to be a martyr is just, no, what he did was wrong is wrong. He should have been able to handle it as an adult in a different way, obviously.
Well, and I think that's one of the divide and conquer methods is you allow for people to have their rebels. But you start putting people in fear of the other rebels. You play people off against each other. You divide and conquer. And it's a tactic that's been used throughout human history. And like I say, Stalin's my favorite example because he labeled anyone he wanted with any kind of money a kulak, but at the same time, members of the Politburo had a tremendous amount of money. So it's something that's very dangerous once we, as a citizenry, start heading down that sort of slippery road.
Yeah, and I mean, you've got everyone, you've got the freedom of speech, and everyone can come in and comment on the different ideas. But it is dangerous when you get people coming in and saying, you know, like you said, divide and conquer. It's a scary thought when you say, well, maybe there was something to justify what he did. And no, there is. What he did was horrible. And he, you know, it is there's no such thing as normal, but I guess as a responsible adult, he could have gone and handled it in a different way. And unfortunately, he didn't.
Well, Samantha, thank you very much for your call. I appreciate it very much. And thanks for listening.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And we have Joe from Waterbury on the line right now.
Hi, Joe. You're on the air.
Oh, hi. I like your discussion. It's great.
Well, thank you.
Well, thank you very much.
I just had a question. I guess it's not entirely just what you were just talking about, but I heard you mention about them at one point about making that China had stealth fighters, like, you know, United States-type technology.
Oh, yes, the Chinese J-20.
Right. Well, see, I read, it was about 2 years ago in the New York Times, there was a very small article that said that they were actually manufacturing stealth fighters for America. It had been kind of outsourced, you know, like the automobile manufacturing and stuff. And it was a small article in the Times, and, you know, it just shocked me. I didn't realize that they had that technology and that they would be, like, you know, outsourcing that kind of manufacturing to any foreign country, much less to China. Well, and I just didn't know if you guys were aware of that or if you knew anything about it, because I never heard anything else about it, so I really don't know.
Well, it's funny that you should mention that, because it's something that is... It's very difficult to find information on because it's always swept under the carpet. But DOD in particular is made to outsource a lot of their technological developments and research overseas to China. And one of my favorite examples, too, was the DOD bought some like 4,000 computers. All were manufactured in China. And there was a fellow who had been a employee of the CIA for many years. I saw him on, I think it was CNN, and he was saying how ridiculous this was. He said, because, you know, China could very easily build back doors in to get our technology. And so you do see this happen, that, you know, most of what the Chinese manufacture are copies of the U.S. technology. They saw how we make stealth drones, how we make stealth bombers, and then they say, okay, we like how you do it. We're going to do it better. Then they steal the technology, and they start manufacturing it themselves. We just allow them to do it because it's cheaper.
Joe, thank you very much for that call. We have another caller on the line, so we'll have to go, but really appreciate your joining us today.
Right,
thanks, Joe. Appreciate it. And this should be Bowen from Winchester calling in.
Hi, Bowen. How are you?
Hey, Bowen. How's it going?
All right. Hey, I just had kind of an observation here. It seems to me that you get something like Dorner doing his thing or whatever happened down there. And instead of having the facts come out, and even if they come out slowly, well, this we know and that we know, and you know, and follow him through and have the thing go, it seems that the media directs people to jump to judgment. No matter which side they jump on, you're directed to take a position, to jump to a judgment that Dorner was, he was fighting injustice, or he was a crazy man, one or the other.
Yeah.
There's no in-between. There's no allowance for people to do their own vetting of the facts, because the facts don't get put out there.
Don't forget, it's infotainment.
It's infotainment, exactly. And you got to keep that running for as long as you can. But, you know, and then at a point something else takes over, and boom, you drop it all together and nobody knows anything about it.
Exactly.
And there you are, stuck on one side or the other, and you carry that position. You never learn any more real information because it's just, you know, it's not popular anymore. So you continue to carry this particular opinion that you basically received. You were spoon-fed one way or the other from the media, and that's all you're going to get out of it unless you go digging for it.
And I've got a question for you, Bowen. Uh-huh. Do you think the American people are happy with being dumbed down?
I think people are dumbed down enough they don't know they're being dumbed down.
That has to do with kind of what you were talking about. You're kind of alluding to the fact of media bias now, aren't you?
Yeah, to a degree, yeah. There's a media bias, and I think there's two ways that goes about. I think some of it is directed, that somebody wants or does not want a particular issue out there, and I think some of it is because people don't ask for the information. They don't go looking for it. And, of course, if they don't have a clue that it's out there, then they're not going to go looking for it. I've got a friend now who, a bright fellow, who was dissatisfied with what he was getting for the news. So he was looking for a news source. And what he wanted to do was he was going to try this one. And he was going to try, MSNBC. He was going to try CNN. He was going to try Fox. Until he found... Basically, what he was looking for was a personality that he could get along with to get the news from. And I'm saying, hold on, stop right there. No matter where you stop, you're only going to get what that particular person or that outlet wants to deliver to you. You're not looking for the news. You're looking for conclusions, and that's what they're going to give you. You know, if you jump on the web, you go to PKN, for one. I found this station to be exceptional in the way that it covers from wall to wall, and the opinions are all the way from one side to the other, all the way through. You can sit here and get stuff. You can go on the internet and you can fish around and you can find opposing views, and then you can use your damn head and figure out which are actually possible. You know, and in some cases, some of this stuff is just totally impossible if you go looking at the facts of it.
And sometimes they almost insult your intelligence. Go ahead, Marshawn.
They do, actually. I mean, that's one thing that drives me nuts is, you know, occasionally, I scan all these different news outlets every day. I look at about 7 or 8, and it's mind-numbing, you know, periodically having to go, you know, every day.
You're talking international, a lot of foreign,
but I do look at American press, too, because I figure, you know, I don't want to be biased. And, you know, so I give it a look. But one thing that drives me nuts is there's this woman on Fox, KT McFarlane, and people like her because she's very loud, she's very boisterous. You know, America, we're number one. But then I listen to what she has to say, and it's all, I mean, just unbelievably ignorant. Somebody who's never, I mean, like she's talking about, oh, China's trying to play tough, China's trying to play tough with the United States. Well, they really think they can push the United States around. And I'm looking at this.
Well, that's where you got back from. Okay?
They got the United States by the short hairs right now.
Yeah, and I'm thinking financially, militarily, the new stealth planes. And then she talks about Russia like it's an anachronistic power, like, oh, they're special ed. And I'm thinking they have stealth submarines. But the fact is, though, is people like her because they, like you just said, they found a personality they
exactly.
like. They don't look at the facts.
It's a beauty contest. The same as the elections. They're a beauty contest. You get fed the nominees and the candidates, and some get weeded out. For instance, in this, the only other viable candidate that I could see this last presidential election, and I would not agree with him at all, was Ron Paul. And he was totally stuffed out of the conversation. I mean,
sure
he was just
absolutely
eliminated. And, you know, and I get stuff on Facebook with people who love Ron Paul, and they'd be going this, and they'd be picking up information from him here and there. But it was not coming out in the mainstream media,
you're right.
Period.
You're right, Bowen. He was the only opposition voice.
He was the only opposition, and as poor an opposition as I thought he was, he actually had a good following, and I thought that following could be developed into something worthwhile, even though, you know, on the surface, I don't think he really had it together enough to do it, but he had the people, and he had the basics of the issues in his hand, and he was putting them out there.
He didn't have any depth.
Yeah. Well, that's sort of like where the country was founded in.
Yeah,
his ideals of
nationalistic. It's insane. It really is insane.
Well, Bowen, thank you very much for calling.
Thanks for calling in, Bowen.
Really appreciate
thank you very
your
much.
Input. And call again. Thanks.
All right. Have some fun.
Adios. Thanks for listening. And that was a hell of a compliment Bowen gave us as well, the fact that PKN is kind of a leader, or you can find out a lot about what's going on out there through us in all the media outlets between this show and the other news stuff that we have going between Scott Harris and the East End of Long Island Patch that comes on every day. These guys are putting together, and girls are putting together, interesting news stuff that you won't hear on mainstream media. They're just simply not going
to
cover it.
And if you just joined us, you're listening to In Context on WPKN 89.5 FM in Bridgeport, Connecticut, streaming live at WPKN.org. In Context is on every Monday from noon to 1 p.m. WPKN's live public affairs call-in show. I'm Ken, and I'm here with Marchand and Dell, and we only have about 10 minutes left on the air in this show. So if you'd like to call in, we'd love to hear from you. The number is 203-336-9756, 203-336-9756. We just have about 10 minutes left of the program, so give us a ring now so you can get on the air.
Well, one of the things I love about being able to broadcast with this station is that there's so many people with so many different, you know, political opinions and backgrounds, social, socioeconomic, and it's, you know, we're all allowed to have a voice, which is really what the press was supposed to be. Instead, now what you do is you have them pushing a particular agenda. Nobody follows up on a story. There aren't any journalists out there going, hey, wait a minute, Russian bombers overflew a U.S. Air Force base in Guam, or the fact that, you know, the reason why Assad is staying in power is because of Russian special forces. You know, they're Russian tanks, they're Russian Iskander ballistic missiles in Syria. Nobody, because the media is pretty much told, and that's what to report. And that's why one of the last things I want to mention, you know, before we get off air, is that President Obama repealed the anti-propaganda law. There was a law put into place at the end of World War II. It was anti-propaganda. It said the government cannot basically, you know, dictate to the press or to the media what they can and can't report. They can't, you know, just simply tell the media, look, you know, you have to report our Department of Defense line, and that's all you can broadcast. I mean, this was what separated us from Stalin's Russia or Hitler's Germany. But President Obama, for the first time since the end of World War II, repealed that law, now allowing the federal government to go in and say, you can't report this. And I think the reason why that article disappeared off Fox was because they got a phone call from the White House or from the Pentagon saying, listen, you're not going to report that. And Fox went,
and that's pretty
no
scary,
problem.
Folks. I mean, that is really scary, because people need to know. And that's why we're here on the air doing this, and why we're able to do it. It's because we're listener sponsored. We don't have commercials. Now, Fox may have a big spot. Well, Fox has big sponsors. And when the call comes down to pull something, what are they going to do? But fortunately, we have our listener sponsorship, and our winter fun drive starts tomorrow. So when we have, there are a lot of great premiums. I know they're going to be offered a lot of music premiums and other premiums. So please give a listen and call in and help keep this listener sponsored station on the air. Starting tomorrow for 13 days for our winter fun drive.
And get involved locally. I mean, the fact is that what still allows us to do this is the fact that, well, the federal government hasn't decided to come in and arrest everybody who has a different opinion. You know, I mean, that's really, because that's, you know, we got, who would have ever thought, you know, growing up in the 90s, you know, that we would ever have kill lists, that we would ever be arresting American citizens and throwing them in Guantanamo.
The NDAA. Signed by President Obama. He's gotten a free pass from so much of the liberal community, the progressive community on this.
Exactly. And that's all because a lot of, you know, and I have a lot of liberal friends, and they tell me, they say, well, you know, I don't like the NDAA, I don't like the drones, but it's either him or Romney. No, it's not. Get involved in politics. You know, as the previous caller mentioned, Bowen, he talked about Ron Paul. There are alternatives out there.
And Dennis Kucinich, I mean, they're great. And Ralph Nader, they're great independent politicians.
The problem is, if we don't get involved now, democracy is one of those things that literally you either use it or you lose it. We keep giving the president the power of a king. Eventually, we're not going to be able to broadcast anymore because we're all going to get arrested. Eventually, you're not going to be able to listen to our show because you'll be arrested for listening to our show. So, you know, getting involved now, whether it's, you know, by getting involved with WPKN and donating, whether it's by, you know, and supporting our broadcast, or whether it's by getting involved with your local, you know, your local political affiliates, your local political organizations, your, you know, RTM and things like that, unless you do something, it's going to be a slippery, slippery road to authoritarianism.
Yeah, so it's 203-336-9756. Call in. Let's hear what's on your mind. You've got a couple more minutes, like five or something.
That's right.
And then we'll get out of here. Where is this story archived? On your site, on In Context? You want to lead them there?
Which story is that?
Well, any of them. You've got programs for – you've got podcasts up there.
Of course, yeah.
Tell us about that.
Yeah, go to incontextreport.com. We have all of the shows on this series, our live public affairs series of WPN, our archive there. In addition to that, I have a predecessor series called History Counts, which is linked to it, and that's where we go in detail the assassinations of Bobby Kennedy, Jack Kennedy, Martin Luther King. I talked one-on-one with the people who'd done the original investigation and King's assassination. We talked to the lawyer who handled his case. And you get the real dope there about what's went on in these situations. And I believe we have another caller.
We got Joe.
Good afternoon.
On the line. Gerald from Bridgeport is on the line.
Hi, Joe.
Gerald.
How you doing?
Is it Jerry or Joe?
Gerald.
Gerald. Hi, Gerald.
Hey.
You're on the air.
Quick question. I know you're getting ready to go off air. I'm coming late to the table, but I just want to get you to articulate some of your sort of underlying axioms for how to deal with the system, because I'm a little I think you're coming basically from like a libertarian perspective on politics, right?
Yeah, if you listened to our coverage over the last year, we did talk a lot about Ron Paul, and because he was, as our one of our earlier callers mentioned, the only person who was really calling into question the war policy and the assault on our civil liberties.
But I think as a whole, we all come from very many diverse political backgrounds, but I think in many ways we all, you know, we're all brought together by the common belief that we fundamentally need a change in our system. and we need people to get involved.
And it's about free speech, too. I mean, we're not leaning this way or that way. It's about reporting the facts.
That's right. We're neither left nor right
here.
Listeners.
Okay, all right. I'm clear on that. Okay, good. So then in terms of changing the system, first of all, I think, you know, if we go back to first principles, we have to define what is this system that we're trying to change. How are you actually, and I'll stop there because I know you don't have a lot of time, but if you could just sort of, from each of your perspectives, you know, kind of go back to 101 and tell me, like, well, how are we defining the system that it is that you want to change? And I'll be listening. So,
all right, thanks, Gerald.
I'll hang up, but I look forward to your response.
Okay, thanks very much.
We just have
a few minutes. If I could just start by saying I've put out my views on all the big issues on incontextreport.com in long, detailed essays. I think that, first of all, the two objectives of our government for me is to restore the economy and to restore our civil liberties. And I outline in detail the policies I think we should follow if you go to incontextreport.com. But the very first step we need to do is a new foreign policy. We have to end the wars. The wars are killing our economy, and they're also the pretext for this massive assault on our civil liberties. End the war, then dismantle the national security state, and then rebuild the United States economy. That's what I stand for. And it's not a left-wing or a right-wing viewpoint. It's a pro-America viewpoint.
And I think on that note as well, I mean, being a military affairs analyst, I'm much more national security focused. But that having been said, I feel that what we're doing, you know, fighting wars in Syria, Libya, even Afghanistan, we're failing to defend our own borders, from whether it's from the drug gangs in Mexico or from the threat of Russia or China. I mean, my favorite example is Switzerland's a country pledged to neutrality, but they're pledged to neutrality through strength. I think we need to invest very strongly in national defense, but just that, national defense, not building bases in Germany, not building bridges in Afghanistan, but defending the homeland. That's what the Swiss do. And the Swiss have a large military, but it is to defend Switzerland. And that's how they maintain their neutrality. So I think, you know, and that's how we come back to rebuilding America. We have to have a policy of America first. What we allow our corporations to do, what we as a society do, has to be done with the consideration of what is best for the American citizens, all of them, as a whole, not just what's best, not just what's going to bring about short-term profit.
Yeah, I think if we're going to get our strength back, they're going to have to do something about the economy, period. Because we're weak because we're broke and we have no money. Can you able to go out and buy a decent dinner for yourself? Are you able to go out and buy clothes for your kids or stuff like that? And that's where the basis of everybody is focused in. They love the free stuff. So they're going to go with anybody who gives them free stuff. But if we have jobs and they give that to us, they're empowering us. And if the media comes with knowledge and we gain knowledge and send our people to school again and figure all that stuff out and lower kids should be going to school for nothing, you know? If the government's going to get involved in it, they should put up schools and have us go there and learn stuff. Then we can go out in the economy. We can go spend our money after we get great jobs. And that's where our strength is going to be. It's not from sitting on our butt and waiting for something to dole stuff out to us and have everybody take our power away and ship it overseas, either economically wise or defense budget wise. I mean, that opens
Absolutely.
Up a whole can of worms. But basically, this is what nationalism is, right?
That's where we're all saying we're not left-wing and we're not right-wing and we're not Democrats and we're not Republicans. We're for what's best for the country and for the American people, regardless of ideology.
Exactly.
All right.
Exactly.
Well, thanks very much for joining us.
Listen, in very
context,
well put.
We're on Mondays from noon to 1 p.m. And tomorrow starts the WPN's pledge drive, so please call in and be generous. Our website's incontextreport.com. Thanks for
Find us on Facebook, In Context.
And all the shows will be archived on the PCAN website, WPCAN.org. Search In Context, any one of the DJs here, and that's how we do it. We are the prototype for what radio is, my friend. First speech all the way.
Don't get fooled again.
Thanks for joining us. Bye-bye. We don't